This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The National Center for Education Statistics says that by 2022, the number of Hispanic students in public elementary and secondary schools is projected to grow 33% from 2011 numbers. The number of multiracial students is expected to grow 44%. This increasing diversity in the classrooms, coupled with the obstacles many students face in society and often in their own homes, pose a challenge to educators and school administrators, with the big question being how can they meet the educational needs of all students. This evening and tomorrow, Northern Kentucky University's College of Education and Human Services will present forums to address race in education. And joining us this afternoon to discuss how to prepare all students for future success, regardless of race or economic background, are Chair and Professor of the Department of Teacher Education at Northern Kentucky University's College of Education and Human Services, Dr. Roland Santos Coloma. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Roland, good to see you this afternoon. Thank you for having me, Mark. How big is this level of inequality that we're hearing talked about in the nation's education system? I mean, just how big of an issue is this?
It's really a big issue. And in part, what we're seeing here is just ongoing inequalities that we're seeing both in terms of academic underachievement that's also tied into opportunity gaps. So in many school districts where we're seeing, you know, Black, Latino, and multiracial students underperforming in comparison to white and Asian students, that's one layer that we need to take a look at. But another layer that we can take a look at is the kind of environment that we have in the classrooms in schools where we can see that those students can highlight the strengths and the kinds of resources that they need in order to succeed in their classes.
You know, the Supreme Court ruled on segregation and inequality in education back in 1954 in Brown v. Board of Education. And I always ponder, you know, why is it that 62 years after that decision, we still struggle with this whole issue of education and inequality in the whole system?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Brown v. Board decision is a very important milestone for our schools and our society at large. But as you know also, there had been resistance in implementing those desegregation plans. And what we're seeing in some school districts is actually a resegregation where you see students are becoming less and less included in those kinds of schools and programs.
So as far as the challenges that are faced by minorities as a result of this, what kinds of things does this make it more difficult for them to access, say, more advanced classes and better quality classes?
So some of the things that we're seeing in schools are you have more students of color who are in special education or remedial classes than you have a good number of white and Asian students who are in honors and advanced classes. Those create different kinds of disparities in their trajectories in the P-12 school system and then what happens to them post-secondary in colleges, universities, and careers.
Oh, that's true. There is that ripple effect. What happens in your education early on is going to carry over into your college education too.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're certainly seeing that at colleges and universities across the country.
Now, is this reflected also in what you see in disciplinary records of schools? Is that an issue as well?
Yes. We see an overrepresentation, particularly of African Americans who are disciplined, who are in suspension cases. So they get stereotyped or profiled as students with, quote, problems, as, quote, being bad students. And we have to really rethink in what ways are we engaging them in meaningful ways so that their interests, their concerns are more at the forefront of our curriculum and teaching rather than we're just saying, oh, gosh, this kid is just acting out or not being engaged in a proper way.
How's this affecting teachers? What's the impact on them?
Well, this is part of our day-to-day work as teachers in our schools where we need to have inclusive and engaged classrooms so that learning can truly take place. So for us in the Department of Teacher Education at NKU, part of our mission is to ensure that we create classroom environments, teaching opportunities, and learning possibilities so all students can be included and engaged.
Now, what part is played by the numbers of minorities in teaching positions and administrators? Do we need more?
Oh, absolutely. Our teaching force is not reflective in many ways of the kind of racial, ethnic, cultural diversity that we have in our region and across the country. So we're very interested and we're very keen to make sure that we create a pipeline from middle school, high school, for folks who might be interested in teaching, enter college, and pursue teaching as a career.
So you create a pipeline. What else can you do to improve diversity in the teaching and administration ranks?
Well, in many ways, it starts also with the kind of things that we're doing at the college or the university level. So can we create support mechanisms, student groups, where students of color, diverse students can come together so that they have support of one another? And institutionally, can we create resources for, or can we provide resources for them so that the recruitment, retention, and graduate and job placement are there for them?
Now, how much of dealing with the changing student population, and how much of that is covered in teacher training? Are teachers aware, or are they being made aware of the situation and what's going on?
Absolutely. I mean, part of our coursework is either curriculum or courses specifically on diversity, but also in terms of the placements where we send them from their first education class all the way to when they're doing their student teaching. We make sure that there are diversity placements there so that they can be exposed to a variety of life experiences and cultures and languages.
How much of a role can families play in helping with this situation?
In terms of families encouraging their youngsters to become teachers
Either
and educators?
Become teachers, that's one. We can talk about both, actually. Become teachers. Also, how much can families help with this, the inequality that exists? What kinds of things can they do to help their students counter that?
Absolutely. I think we need to create an environment where, for instance, parents who may not feel that they can come to the schools and advocate for their young ones. We need to create an environment for them so that there's a good school-family relationship. So that's one aspect.
So they feel like they have a voice.
Absolutely.
In the whole situation.
So for some families who come from racial, linguistic, and cultural backgrounds where they may not feel represented or supported in the schools, they might feel a divide or a wall where they can't enter the school system. So sometimes we will see this play out in parent-teacher conferences where we set these up in the evenings where we would expect parents to come, but at the same time we get dismayed by the lack of turnout. How might we rethink that in ways that perhaps we as educators might need to go to their homes, to those communities, so that we can reach out to them in a much more culturally sensitive and linguistically appropriate ways?
And also, let's go back to the other idea that you were suggesting about families encouraging, parents encouraging their kids to go into the teaching profession.
Well, you know, there's this old adage that those who can't teach. And I think that's really unfortunate you know, because we as teachers are really, in many ways, families and communities give that opportunity to us to mold the minds of young people. And it's such an important responsibility. And for many of us, it's a calling. It's a calling to the profession. So teaching for me, and I was a former teacher, teaching for me is such an important responsibility that we as a society should really embrace, value, and frankly, pay better.
You think that old adage, I bet when you hear that, you cringe.
It becomes an opportunity for me to educate others in terms of what we actually do and the kind of difference we make in young people's lives.
I oftentimes wonder where in the heck that adage came from, that those who can't teach doesn't make much sense anyhow. How much does the family situation play in this? Are teachers learning to deal with students from families that have problems, poverty, drugs, parents who don't care for the kids? Are they learning how to work through those situations with their students?
Yeah. I think often one of the things that we have to do is to not necessarily blame the family, right? Because sometimes when students come to us in schools with they may not know their numbers or letters, for instance, or they might come with certain kinds of family situations that we have to deal with in schools. Sometimes our knee-jerk reaction is to blame the family for what's going on. How might we consider a different strategy of working with the families and seeing what might be the strengths and resources that those families have that we can use in our teaching, in their students' learning, and how we work with them? So to create a much more positive relationship as opposed to an antagonistic relationship. And another way to think about families is how could we see them as partners? partners of their students' learning, partners of educators, so that we could reinforce in many ways what young people are dealing with at home and what we can address alongside the parents and guardians that that those students have at home.
As far as what you see at NKU, the students who are learning to be teachers, training to be teachers, how diverse a group is that?
We have a sense of the kind of socioeconomic diversity that is very much reflective of our region. So NKU is very much committed to providing access to as many young people who are interested in pursuing higher education. So we have the kind of socioeconomic diversity that we have. We have the range of various kinds of life experiences. But when it comes to racial ethnic diversity, when it comes to linguistic diversity, we still have a ways to go.
Do we have enough education majors to meet the needs of the schools?
You know, the conversation now nationally is we're seeing shortages, particularly in high-need schools, particularly in urban settings, as well as in high-needs disciplines such as sciences, mathematics, and special education.
So the main question that we started off with was how can the educational system work to ensure that every student has an equal opportunity to succeed regardless of their race or their socioeconomic situation? So just in broad terms, what are some of the things that you think can be done to address that?
And this is where I think NKU has taken such a strong leadership role in this area to address the needs of all students so all students succeed. So one of the things that we're doing is we are actually spending more time in the schools. So we have courses and programs that are very much embedded in the school system so that our teacher candidates can see what's going on the ground before they become teachers. Second one, we are also implementing programs such as, you know, really thinking about culturally responsive teaching so that we bring out the strengths of those students from various backgrounds and use that for our teaching and for their learning. And at the same time, the new push that we're considering is what we're calling trauma-informed care. So for young people who've experienced different kinds of stress or adverse conditions as they were growing up, to think about how we best support them so that we don't say to young people, that's your problem at home, park it once you get to the school and we don't deal with them. How do we create an environment for them so that they feel supported and they can see that they can succeed in the schools?
And we're talking about the role that the teachers and parents can play in dealing with education inequality. What about the students themselves? What kind of role do they have in this?
Well, I mean, a lot of students really struggle in terms of, do they have advocates? Do people care for them? And this is really the root in terms of their disengagement. When young people do not feel like someone cares for them, that someone's looking out for them, they see the school system as, well, we're just here, we're mandated to be here. But if we could create those caring spaces in schools, I think students can feel like they can turn to an adult to share their issues, concerns, as well as their strengths, what they are good at, as well as what gives them pleasure to be in the schools.
So it's kind of like what you were saying with the parents. It's a way for them to have a voice.
Absolutely.
In their own education, and that's important. Gets them to buy into the whole thing more, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, tell us about the forum that's coming up. Starts this evening. Tell us some more about that.
We are so delighted to have Dr. Crystal Laura, who is one of our national experts on race, education, and diversity, who will give us the keynote this evening. And she comes from Chicago State University, a very diverse city with the racial, cultural, linguistic backgrounds that we're seeing now in many places across the country. She wrote a book called Being Bad, My Baby Brother and the School-to-Prison Pipeline. And it's both an academic but very personal story, and a story about her younger brother and her middle-class black family and how they're dealing with his identification as a special education student in the schools, how he got into trouble in the school, and which led him in many ways as being profiled and stereotyped as a bad student, which then got him disengaged from the school system and the educational process. And over time, they saw him, you know, be with the wrong crowd, doing the wrong things, and eventually he was incarcerated. And part of the process for them is how do they then address not just him being in the being in prison or the juvenile center, but at the same time, once he was released, how do they create an environment for him so that there's so he can transition to adult life in ways that he can still fulfill other potentials?
The school to prison pipeline, that to me is just a frightening thought. I mean, how real is that? How big a problem is that for minority students?
It's actually quite a big problem. When you take a look at our prison population, for instance, across the country, there's a disproportionate number and percentage of African-American and Latino, particularly men, who are in the prison system in comparison to those who are in universities, for instance. So it is quite an issue that minority communities are dealing with.
So who else is going to be speaking at the forum?
So Dr. Crystal Laura will be our main keynote mm-hmm. this evening. Tomorrow is a full day for the think tank. We have fantastic sessions dealing from challenging the school-to-prison pipeline, how to teach and address these difficult topics such as questions of race and racism, also thinking about the trauma-informed care, how do we equip our educators, social workers, and counselors so that we can implement this in our settings, as well as we also have this fantastic panel in terms of how people are using or seeing athletes and entertainers as platforms for social justice.
What are you hoping comes from the forum, Roland, in terms of the message that the people who attend get and the results that might come from it?
I hope at the most basic level, a sense of awareness that this is an issue that is impacting not just minority communities, but all of us in this country. And then the second one is, how do we then act on this awareness? So it's not enough for us to know, but how do we act in a way that can really address these issues at the individual, at the interpersonal, and at the institutional level?
Are you hopeful that at some point, as talking about earlier how it's been 62 years since Brown v. Board of Education, are you hopeful that at some point we defeat this problem of inequality in the education system?
Well, I'm an educator, so I'm always hopeful.
So you're always hopeful.
No change happens without ongoing advocacy through raising awareness and acting on them. So for me, this is part of our work as educators that, we continuously address the issues that might be difficult but very pertinent so that we can move forward as a society.
And if people want more information about the forum, is there a website they can go to?
Absolutely. They can certainly go to NKU and the College of Education and Human Services website.
And the forum starts tonight and runs through tomorrow, right?
That is correct. So tonight we start at 6:30 until 9 o'clock, and then tomorrow from 9 a.m. until 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Roland, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure. Thank you, Mark.
Chair and Professor of the Department of Teacher Education at Northern Kentucky University's College of Education and Human Services, Dr. Roland Sintos Coloma. Northern Kentucky University's College of Education and Human Services is going to present its discussions on race and education, as you heard, this evening and tomorrow. It's part of its Think Tank series. And that two-day event is going to feature Dr. Crystal Laura, Associate Professor of Educational Leadership at Chicago State University. The keynote address by Dr. Laura tonight at 6:30, and tomorrow Think Tank session is going to be held from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on the NKU campus. And you can find a link to more information about that at wvxu.org. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. You can find archives of our programs at wvxu.org. Pete Reitmeier was the producer for today's show with help from Kevin Reynolds. Belinda Kai was the assistant producer, and Dave Shermer was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. Each Friday on Cincinnati Edition, we review and discuss the people, stories, and events that are affecting the tri-state. This week, you'll get details and an update on the attack that took place Monday on the campus of Ohio State University. We'll also hear about President-elect Donald Trump's visit to Cincinnati, the Hamilton County tax rebate, and this week's other big stories. That's our weekly news review on the next Cincinnati Edition, Friday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.